We're going to go to Exodus chapter 17, starting in verse 8. Exodus 17, starting in verse 8. It says this: while the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. Moses commanded Joshua, "Choose some men to go out and fight the army of Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill, holding the staff of God in my hand." So Joshua did what Moses had commanded, and he fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and climbed to the top of the nearby hill. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. Moses' arms soon became tired, and he could no longer hold them up. So Aaron and Hur found a stone for him to sit on. Then they stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands, so his hands held steady until sunset. And as a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of the Amalekites in the battle. After the victory, the Lord instructed Moses, "Write this down on a scroll as a permanent reminder. Read it aloud to Joshua. I will erase the memory of the Amalekites from under heaven." Moses built an altar there. He named it Yahweh Nis, which means "The Lord is my banner." And he said, "They have raised their fists against the Lord's throne, so now the Lord will be at war with the Amalek generation after generation." And so this morning, before we actually get to our text, we're going to rewind a little bit. How many of us have ever watched something, listened to something, and then wanted to rewind so that we could watch it again? Have you ever done that? Kim and I, we had the privilege Thursday to go on a plane to lovely Idaho. Lovely, good old Idaho. It's where some of our family, my family is. And so my mom, my stepdad, two sisters. And it was my stepdad's birthday. And so my older sister, decided to be sweet and kind. And she flew me and my wife up to Idaho. So we left Idaho. We left Kim's truck at the Ontario Airport Thursday, I think around 12 o'clock, rushed in, got on the plane, flew up to Idaho, picked up my half-sister, Summer, who flew in from Texas, and her husband, Cameron, and their little son, Ethan. I'm throwing out all the names just so you know, right? So sweet. Trying to drive from Salt Lake City up to Rigby, Idaho, a very small town. Dropped them off at 10. Get up at like 5, 6 in the next morning. It's just so much fun. And we got to see a little bit. Up there is very country. It's a lot of country. If you listen to country music, you go to places like that and you realize this is what country is about, right? It's real country. People with guns and hats and stuff. But anyway, so we got to drive around, spend the day with family, celebrated birthdays and all the good stuff. The next day was the day we get to return home because we missed our kids and our dogs, and we wanted to obviously get home to our house and all that good stuff. And we get a text at 11 in the morning, "Your flight has been canceled. Flight has been canceled." We're like, "What? Oh my gosh, what are we going to do?" Now my sister, who's my older sister, is very giving and very kind, said, "You can take my car." We had to rent a car, so we had to return it to Salt Lake City. We first looked to see if there's any more flights going out, and there was not. So we could not just jump on a different plane. Tried calling the rental car people, see if we can take the car from Idaho to California. That wasn't an option, unless we wanted to pay an extra $1,000, but who wants to do that, right? So my sister graciously gives the car. So we drove from Idaho yesterday, leaving at 12, 1 o'clock, and got in like 2:30 in the morning. And I don't know, 2:33, probably got to sleep at 3, up at 5:30 this morning, got to get ready for church, right? Crazy couple of days. And then I lost my wallet last night, which the great thing is it turned up this morning, so that's good. In Arizona or Nevada, somewhere like that, but somebody found it and called and said, "We have your wallet." So that was very kind. But it was a kind of a long, crazy 2 days. So I kind of painted a picture of mine and my wife's couple days. The last couple of days, we rewinded a little bit, and it was busy, and it was crazy, a little bit tiring. But this morning, we're painting a picture of the Jewish community. And the Jewish community, they had the opportunity, they left the land of Canaan to go to Egypt, and they went there because they ran out of food. It's like Walmart running out of food, and so we're going to run to Temecula, and we're going to hit every store up there. They ran out of food in Canaan, so they went to Egypt because they needed food to live. As they got there, they stayed there because there was a young man, part of the family, who became a powerful man in Egypt. But as time passed on, and as Joseph passed on, and generations passed on, the Jewish community was kind of left and kicked to the curb, which none of us like that feeling when we feel like we're kicked to the curb, right? This is a horrible feeling when you're stabbed in the back and kicked to the curb. And so for the Egyptian people, they became slaves. For the Jewish people, they became slaves to the Egyptians. They were forced to work hard. They were forced slave labor, all kinds of horrible things. And God, after 400 years, it's a long time. Turn here and say 400 years is a long time. 400 years is a real long time. God delivers them. He sends signs and plagues to kind of slap Pharaoh on the face to show Pharaoh, I'm the God, you're not. You're just a guy who may have a name and a title, but you're not the God. And so God was trying to show Pharaoh who he was, but Pharaoh wasn't listening. Just like many people in the world, how many of us know, sometimes we don't listen either, right? Even though we don't have a fancy title, but we sometimes don't listen either. And so God sent 10 plagues. And after 10 plagues, the people were freed and they were allowed to leave Egypt. And they get out of Egypt. And we heard last week about the parting of the Red Sea, that God made a way from them. Where it didn't seem, where it was hopeless. It was dark. It was cold. It was frosty. They didn't feel like they had anything and they were going to die. God opened up a sea and God blew wind to dry the land so they could walk on dry land through the sea. God made a way where it seemed like there was no way. But soon as they got through the Red Sea, what happened next? Well, I'm glad you asked. Exodus 15 says, starting in verse 1, Moses and the people of Israel sang this song to the Lord. I will sing to the Lord. He has triumphed gloriously. He has hurled both horse, rider into the sea. The Lord is my strength, my song. He's given me victory. This is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a warrior. Yahweh is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and army, he's hurled them into the sea. The finest of Pharaoh's officers and drowned them in the Red Sea. And so as we rewind, I know I opened with a text and it was something that happened after this moment, but I wanted to rewind for a minute just to describe part of their journey. They get delivered. They get to pass through the Red Sea. They're singing songs, because how many of us know when we're happy, we're singing songs when we're happy, but now they have depressing songs. So, you know, it doesn't matter. If we're depressed, we turn on depressed songs, right? If we're happy, we sing happy songs. Depressed, because we all know, come on, let's admit it. We all have music that when we're happy, sad, depressed, whatever it may be, lonely, we know what it is we want to listen to. But the Jewish community here, they're singing a song of deliverance. God is a warrior. God is mighty. They just saw water move back. They saw dry land, and they were able to walk through it. As soon as they walked through it, they saw 600 people drowned in a sea. Something that is remarkable, unbelievable. It's a great miracle. And so they're singing a song of deliverance. Everything that they go through along the way, what did God say to them? Write it down. Remember. Write it down. Remember. I don't know how many times I forget things over and over and over again because I didn't write it down. Because I didn't put it somewhere where I would remember, right? God, humanity, one of our great and wonderful characteristics of us is sometimes just things are easy to forget. They're singing a song of deliverance. And as soon as they sing a song of deliverance, they start traveling for a couple days. They travel for a couple days, and you know what they did a couple days later? Moses led the people of Israel away from the Red Sea. As they moved into the desert of Shur, they traveled the desert for 3 days. Their neighbor and say, 3 days. Without finding any water. When they came to the oasis of Marah, the water was too bitter to drink. So they called this place Marah, which means bitter. The people complained, and they turned against Moses. What are we going to drink? They demanded. Moses cried out to the Lord for help, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. Moses threw it in the water, and this made the water good to drink. It was there at Marah that the Lord set before them the following decree as a standard to test their faithfulness to him. So remember, 3 days. days previous. They're singing songs and they're dancing and they're happy. God is so good. God is a warrior. God is amazing. He's provided. He's protected. And then 3 days later, they're sitting there and they're thirsty. The text didn't say that they went to God. They didn't pray and say, God, help us find water. They traveled for 3 days. They stop, and what do? They started complaining to Moses. They started complaining to Moses. They wanted to hurt Moses. Why? Because the water that they found after traveling for 3 days, it was bitter. It was bitter. Anger, disappointment, treated unfairly, resentment. No matter what they experienced 3 days before, it's all forgotten. It's forgotten. 3 days. Three short days. Everything that God just did at the Red Sea, they forgot 3 days later. Just 3 days. And sometimes we can relate with this, because how many times maybe we're waiting for something, hoping for something, and it arrives, and it's similar, but it's not exactly what we hoped for. We ordered something on Amazon, the package shows up on the doorstep, but when we open it, similar, but it's not what we hoped for. They found water. They found it. There it is. But you know what? The water was bitter. It was undrinkable. And I wonder, if we pause for a second, if the bitterness of the water was a reflection still of what their heart was feeling and experiencing. Because how many of them, even though they were freed from the Egyptians, even though their neighbors gave them gold and silver on the way out, even though they walked and traveled and saw the Red Sea part, I wonder still how many of them were still a little bitter they left. Still bitter they had to leave their home. Still bitter, even though they were a slave, even though they had chains, even though they had shackles. Hey, they put some color on those suckers. They were a little designer, you know. They got some, you know, the things to make them look nice. They got used to the comfortability of being a slave and being told what to do. It's kind of like a friend I had one time. And this friend, he was kind of like our bodyguard and friend when we were teenagers. And so everywhere we went, he protected us. And he used to be in and out of prison. And one time I asked him, I said, man, why do you do it? He goes, it's just so easy in there. I'm told when I can go to the bathroom, when to eat. And so he would go in prison. He'd get out. And when he got bored, he'd get in trouble so that he can go back. It's kind of similar to our nature as human beings. Sometimes when boredom sets in and when we just don't want to do, sometimes we just want to go back. Revelation 8:10 says, a third of the angels blew his trumpet, and a great star fell from the sky, burning like a torch. It fell on one third of the rivers and the springs of water. The name of the star was bitterness, and it made one third of the water bitter. And many people died from drinking the bitter water. This is being spoken of the last days and the end days. But I wonder in Revelation 8:10, when God is giving this revelation to the Apostle John, I wonder, as the angel blows the trumpet and as this massive rain of bitterness came down from the sky, it says many people died from drinking water. And I wonder spiritually how many people have died because they won't let their heart be free from bitterness. In this story in our text, as they're traveling along the way, as we're rewinding, as we're remembering, as we're looking, they run into a place. They search for 3 long days. As they get to the place and they find some water, what happened? It was bitter. And I just have to think and ask myself, I just wonder if it was a reflection of how their heart was. The Jewish community is said to be a pick of chosen people. For what? God's people, sons and daughters. But it is a reflection of who he is and what he does, so that we can see God through this community, so we can see God through everything that happened in Genesis to Revelation, so we can see and know who he is from the stories, from the beginning to the end. And so as we look at these people, and as they give us a sign, as they teach us and they help us understand, along the way, how many of us have ever had to deal with something that bothered us, that made us a little bitter? What's bitter? Anger, disappointment, treated unfairly, and a little bit of resentment. resentment. And so the Jewish communities, they're traveling to the place, their new home. They're getting their new home. They're going to home, and they're going to the promised land. It sounds good. It flows with milk and honey. But along the way to this best place, along the way to their best life, they had to learn to deal with some things. And I wonder this morning how many of us God's saying, I'm trying to teach you how to learn to deal with some things. Secondly, Exodus 15, 26. Actually, I'm going to skip that verse. We're going to go on to the next part of the story, Exodus 16, verse 1. It says, the whole community of Israel set out from Elim and journeyed into the wilderness to the place of Sin. Between Elim and Mount Sinai, they arrived there on the 15th day of the second month, one month after leaving the land of Egypt. There, too, the whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt. There, the whole community of Israel complained about Moses and Aaron. If only the Lord had killed us back in Egypt. They moaned. There they sat around pots filled with, we in Egypt, we sat around with pots filled with meat and ate all the bread that we wanted. But you brought us into the wilderness to starve us to death. And the Lord said to Moses, look, I'm going to rain down food from heaven for you. Each day the people can go out, pick up as much food as they need for that day. I will test them to see whether or not they will follow my instructions. And on the sixth day they will gather food, and when they prepare it, there will be twice as much as usual. So Moses and Aaron said to all the people of Israel, by evening you will realize it was the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt. I'm going to go to that one next. So secondly, as they get farther along in the journey, from 3 days into a month, what happened? They ran out of food. Isn't that a tragedy when we run out of food? And what did they do when they ran out of food? This time they complained about to Moses and Aaron. They were mad at Moses and his brother. They were mad. They were frustrated. They were angry. And what did they say? We should be home in Egypt, where we had pots of food. First, they were learning to deal with their thirst. Secondly, now they're learning to deal with their hunger. No matter along this journey, and no matter what they went through, no matter how many miracles God did, they just saw a spring of bitter water become clean and fresh and drinkable. Now there's no food. And instead of stopping and praying, instead of stopping and asking God for help, what did they do? They started complaining again. And they complained against Moses, and they complained against Aaron. And it's usually, isn't it like one, for this community, it's one, two people? It's always somebody's fault, right? The things that I go through, it's always somebody's fault. The things that I'm dealing with, it's always somebody's fault. It's somebody's fault. It's somebody's fault. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's not my fault. It's somebody's fault. And we never see them once stop and just pray and ask for God. It's just easier to complain, isn't it? If God had only killed us back in Egypt, if only. Isn't it funny how sometimes certain situations we can go right to death? Man, if God had only killed me, I would have been so much happier if he killed me in Egypt. Why am I going through this today? How many situations have we ever gone through in life that become so big in our head that it's like, I rather would have just died if God would have just struck me with lightning 2 days ago, then I wouldn't have to deal with this. How many situations sometimes become so big, we play them so big in our mind because we allow God to shrink in our head, we allow the problem to expand and become so big that it's like, if only we had died. You know, one of the things that's proven fact as a human being, we become stronger. How many of us have learned by working out? But working out, man, it's hard to do it every day. How many of us know it's hard to do it every single day? To run, to do squats, to bench press, to lift, curls, all those things. When it comes to being a Christian, there's no difference. In order to become a strong Christian, we have to work out spiritually. And learning from the Bible, how do I work out spiritually? How do I learn from the Bible? How do I learn from the stories? How do I learn from the people to go through things? But as soon as we as people, because we're so fun and wonderful, as soon as something becomes tight, we go right to the same verbiage, if only. Oh man, if God would have done this 2 weeks ago. Man, God, you're late, buddy. God, you missed it. God, if only. God, I wish you would have killed us back in Egypt. Why would we starve to death? God didn't let them die at the Red Sea. God didn't let them die of thirst 27, 28 days before that. Was God going to let them die in this moment? Because their hunger had become so big. And I know what that feels like when I'm so hungry. I do feel like I'm going to die at moments and times and want to hurt somebody unless I can feed my stomach really quick. We all can have those kind of hungry moments where there's something or someone that we're hungry for. And if we don't get what we're hungry for, we kind of throw a fit, no matter our age. Exodus 17:1, at the Lord's command, the whole community of Israel left the wilderness of Sin and moved from place to place. Eventually, they camped at Rephidim, but there was no water there for the people to drink. So once more, the people complained against Moses. Give us water to drink, they demanded. Quiet, Moses replied. Why are you complaining against me? Why are you testing the Lord? Tormented by thirst, they continued to argue with Moses. Why did you bring us out of Egypt? Are you trying to kill us and our children and our babies and our livestock with thirst? Moses cried out to the Lord, what should I do with these people? Man, they're ready to stone me. They're ready to kill me. As we read these stories and we go through our theme, Fighting the Good Fight in 2024, and we look at this story of their journey to the Promised Land, there's a couple things that are obviously really clear and evident. One is some people just don't want to learn the lesson. They just had miraculously fresh, clean water, and now a little bit down the road, hungry, God provided again, man and quail, travel a little bit more, they get thirsty again. And what did they do the minute they didn't get what they wanted? We want what we want, and we want it now. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. I have desires. I have needs, and they're not being met. So I'm going to cry, complain, whine, and then I'm going to beat somebody up. Every single step of the way, tormented. This time now they're tormented. Tormented, severe, mental, physical suffering. Because you know what? Now it wasn't just complaining to Moses and Aaron. They brought their kids and their livestock. Can you believe this, Moses? You're going to kill us and our little babies? Look at them. Look how cute. Look how cute they are. And you're going to kill my little babies too? You're going to kill them? And don't forget about my dogs and my horses and my camels. You're going to kill them too? Still, 2 months, not stopping, not praying. Just let's blame one man. Right? Let's blame one guy for all of our problems. Right? It's all about the man. Let's blame one guy. Never learning a lesson. And all of us this morning, we're so smart. Because I know we've learned a lot of lessons in life. But I'm pretty sure there's probably a couple that God's still trying to teach us that we don't want to learn. I'm sure along the way, how many of us have ever dealt with complaining, bitterness, thirst, hunger, not happy, I'm not satisfied, I'm tormented by someone or something, mentally, physically suffering? Do we see a pattern in them, but can we also see the pattern in us? Patterns are, what is a pattern? It's a regular, repeated arrangement, design, numbers, shapes, circles, colors. They're journeying to their new home. They're going to freedom. They have new home ownership. Beautiful, beautiful days ahead. But no matter along the way what was ahead, they wanted to complain every single day. If you were to look up complain in the dictionary, it means to express dissatisfaction, annoyance about something, the state of our own suffering. Complaining is to validate our feelings. For some people, complaining makes them feel like they brings connection to feel better. For people who complain a lot, we feel like we get a short-term reward. Or sometimes complaining can give a feeling superior to those around us because we want to seek out and destroy what we see as a threat. Google, complaining. And this happened a couple years back, but I'm pretty sure complaining still happens today. And I'm pretty sure that complaining, why they complained then, same reason why we complain today. Repeatedly. Do you know if you complain repeatedly, it rewires your brain to make complaints today? It rewires your brain to think about complaints in the future you're going to make. Over time, your brain will automatically become more negative, and you push out being positive. It becomes a default behavior, and it changes how every single person perceives you. Complaining, bitterness. I wonder what damage we do to ourselves because we just take our eyes off the wrong direction, where we're headed, what we're supposed to be doing, and instead of looking to where we should be going, just like the Jewish community, let's complain about what's in front of us because we're not getting something in the second and in the moment that we want and need. Is their journey so different than our journey? Is their story so different than our story? It's humanity. We haven't evolved. Some people say we were monkeys back in the day. I don't think so. It's not a cousin of mine. I'm not going to claim that, right? But I don't think we evolved from that to this, and we're going to evolve into something, you know, even more weirder later. Humanity is the same from day one to now. Look at the feelings, look at the emotions from day one. We haven't changed. When tragedy, when hard time, when circumstances, when boredom sits in, things they did, we still do today. This is 6,000 years ago, and we're still doing the exact same thing. It's like clothes trends. How many of us know that they say clothes trends kind of circle around, they come back around? Our emotions, our attitudes, our thought life, it's the same thing. What does it do? It circles around. It circles around. Why? Because sometimes the patterns that people went through in the past, we've not allowed them to teach us for our present moments and for the future. What do we learn from their journey? What do we understand? Well, number one, maybe we should learn to watch our complaints. Number one, let's learn to watch our complaints. Apostle Paul, speaking to the Philippians, he said, do everything without complaining and arguing. Now, interestingly, Paul didn't say, you should learn to do a couple things without complaining and arguing. Paul says it's a good idea to do everything without complaining and arguing. Why? Why would we not complain and argue? Because he says if you don't complain and argue, no one will ever be able to criticize you. You'll live a clean, innocent life, children of God, shining like a bright light in a world full of crooked and perverse people. 2,000 years ago, I can't even imagine, you know, our beautiful town, Hemet, is full of beautiful and wonderful people, and I can't imagine Paul writing this 2,000 years ago when he says it's a world full of crooked and perverse people. I can't see it. When we live in Hemet, I don't know if you can see it, but I mean, I can't see it because where we live, it's so perfect, right? People, we haven't changed, and this is 2,000 years ago. They were wicked, and they were corrupt, and they were perverse. They had a problem complaining, just like we have a problem complaining today. Why should we stop complaining? One, it damages ourselves. It damages you. When you complain and when you argue, let's drop out arguing, because arguing is fun. I like to argue, so let's just drop off that out of the equation. Let's just stick with complaining, right? Do everything without complaining. Complaining is bad for us. Have you ever thought, I wonder what people think about me? Have you ever thought what people, I wonder what people are going to say about me. If I do this, if I say this, what are they going to say? What are we going to do? Man, if I look stupid, if I fall and stumble, if I do this, what are people going to say? Paul says, if you want to avoid being worried about what people think, stop complaining. Have a good attitude. If you stop complaining and have a good attitude, people can't find anything to criticize about you. learning to control our complaints. Number two, learning to control our hunger. How many of us are hungry right now? How many of us maybe skipped breakfast? Maybe we had a coffee, so it subdued us a little bit. But now that hunger is starting to circle back around, and so our stomachs are starting to talk, and our stomach is saying, you know what you want for lunch? You know what sounds good right now? The donuts are almost gone, but you don't want those anyway. This is what you would like today. We are designed to be hungry people. But in every single one of us in here, when push comes to shove, we've learned how to feed ourselves. We know if we have a little bit of dough, a little bit in the bank, if we have plastic or cash, we know where we can go. We know where our favorite place is. We know what our bodies just crave and love to death in pieces. But sometimes, no matter what happens in life, some of us still haven't learned how to feed ourselves spiritually. And our spiritual hunger is actually more dominant than our physical hunger. Because how many of us know that our hunger, the physical hunger that our stomach has, it speaks loud and clear. There's grumbling, there's aches, there's pains, there's little voices in there that are pulling and tugging and saying, feed me, feed me, feed me. And it's strong. But you know what is stronger than your physical hunger or my physical hunger? It is our spiritual hunger. It is our spiritual hunger. It is so strong and is so powerful. How do we know that our spiritual hunger is more powerful than our physical hunger? Because look what we do every single day. Look at the things that we chase. Look at our hobbies. Look at our sports. Look at our cars. Look at our houses. There are so many different things that we hunger inside for. And what did we do? Everything that we do in life, it's outward expressions of what we're inside, what we're hungry for. The cars that we drive, the places we work, the places we eat, every single thing that is on the outside, it's an outward reflection of the hunger that is on the inside. And there are days and there's moments and there's seconds that we spend every single day trying to feed that hunger. In this story here, the Jewish community, as they get to a spot, they're hungry, they can't find food, there's no more animals, they're not going to kill their dogs and eat it, they're not going to go there, they don't want to kill, you know, it's their favorite pet. Why would I kill that for? All the food is gone, and they're wondering, what are we going to do, because we're going to die, we're so hungry. God brings them manna, this soft little thing in the morning, like a pastry, like a piece of bread, not a thick piece, it wasn't a thick slice of bread, but it was food. It was substance. God, every morning, he rained down manna from heaven. Every night, quail would fall out of the sky so they could have some quail for dinner. God provided supernaturally for them. When they were hungry, when they were desperate, what did God do? God provided. When our hunger gets shifted into the right direction, God provides 100% of the time. When you're hungry, when you realize that what I'm hungry for, it's really him. What I'm hungry for, it's really to feed the spiritual need. And it doesn't matter how long we've been Christians. It doesn't matter how long we've read the Bible. Because you know what? We as people, it's really easy to forget things. And so if God fed us miraculously something 2 weeks ago, this morning, as we're listening to worship music, and All Hail King Jesus, there's a moment in there, the lyrics, where they're sinking deep into my heart, mind, and soul, and I'm feeling God's presence. There's a second, then there's a moment of God speaking to me. Easily, soon as 5 minutes goes down the road, it's easy to just forget those moments of God touching, speaking, allowing me to feel his presence. We forget where our bread comes from. We forget where the manna comes from. We forget where the quail comes from. No matter how many times God provides, when the cupboards are empty, it's you're a loser. You're not providing. Instead of asking God for help, we quickly can get so negative and mean and hateful and hurtful. Matthew 5:6 says, God blesses those who are hungry and thirst for justice because they're going to be satisfied. When Jesus was saying God blesses those, The word blessed there means supremely blessed, over-blessed, fully blessed, running over. God blesses those who hunger. But not really, the blessing is not those who hunger, because how many of us know we're all hungry? What he meant to say, Jesus, in the language there, was God blesses those who realize where their hunger is and where they go to get that hunger met. And when you get to the right place, Jesus says, then you're going to get satisfied. We have a lot of hungry people today. We have a lot of hungry people in our world today because they're not getting fed the right source to feed them spiritually. Watch our complaints. Feed yourself. Watch the hunger that we have inside. And thirdly, we got to check our heart, mind, and soul all the time. Sometimes one of the hardest things to do in the world is to admit you're wrong, to say you're sorry. It's my fault. I was wrong. Sometimes when we deal with sin, when our heart tells us, I'm always right, I'm never wrong, I'm perfect, I'm always right, we will never, ever need a Savior if we don't ever see the sin that we have. Jesus told a story one time. Two people went to pray. One guy said, God, I thank you. I'm wealthy. I've got nice clothes. I got a nice car outside. I'm going to go back out and hop on that donkey. But I've got all this nice stuff. And he said, God, thank you. And he's sitting there praying. He says, I thank you. I'm not like that homeless guy, that little weirdo over there. All of his prayers were about how blessed he was with all the stuff on the external. And then there was another guy at the temple praying, and he says, God, forgive me. I'm a sinner. He says the guy couldn't even look up to heaven because he really was in touch with how much sin he had in his life. And yes, there are people in this world that sin more than others. Yes, there are people who do more wrongs than others. There's people who just commit things that are horrible and disgusting. And all the while, we love to point them out. We like to point out other people's sins and mistakes because we never like to point out our own. But Jesus said the man who looked up to heaven or could not look up to heaven was the man who went home justified. Life, one of the things and what the Jewish community had a hard time with is realizing if I don't see my sin, then I don't need a Savior. If I see my sin, then I absolutely, most definitely understand that I need a Savior. From the very beginning of time, we're all born broken. We're all born with this sin that's in place inside of all of us. And the minute you awaken to understand, I have sin, we have sin, and it has to be dealt with. And it was dealt with. Jesus on the cross, he dealt with it. But we look at it two ways every single day. One humbly, or the other is with pride in our heart. Humbly says, God, forgive me, and thank you for another day. Pride says, man, I can't wait to go out and just do whatever I want to do and put people down. You know, the thing is, sometimes when we have pride in our heart, we don't realize how we treat other people. When we have pride in our heart, when we have pride in our mind, when we have pride in ourselves, when we just think that we're better and we're gooder than everyone else, when life just seems to be going so well, sometimes we don't realize that pride has built up and we treat people differently because we don't ever look in the mirror. Sorry, pausing for a coffee break real quick. We don't ever, ever, ever look in the mirror. The Jewish community, they never once would stop. Say, maybe what we're going through, maybe we should just stop and pray. They didn't stop. What did they do? They just continued to complain and get bitter and tormented. Because no matter what God did and no matter what God provided for, no matter all the miracles they saw, to me, the Red Sea seems like a big one. Like if I saw a big one like that, it's like, okay, we got this. But they forgot it 3 days later when they were thirsty. And then they forgot it again 27 days later. Because there's certain things we don't want to learn along the way. And one of the things we don't learn along the way is how do I live with a humble heart? Jesus said the humble people get to inherit the earth. Why do the humble people inherit the earth? Because the Bible says at the end, there's going to be a fire. You know, in the beginning, there was a flood. How many of us remember the story of Noah? There was a story of Noah. He built the boat. Him and his family and his kids and the animals survived. But everyone else died because they didn't want to get on the boat. Noah was the only one who wanted to get on the boat. He built it. It was beautiful, 450 feet long. But it says that God destroyed and judged the earth because of sin and wickedness. And the only people who wanted to do right got on the boat. Everyone else who wanted to continue to do bad things, we're going to party like this till it's 1999, right? We already passed that, but we're going to keep on keeping on. They suffered and died, and God said there's going to be a second unfortunate judgment. This time, the world with fire, which could be nuclear judgment. It could be somebody, multiple people, pushing buttons that causes nuclear bombs to go off everywhere. We don't know how, where, and when, but it says it's going to end with fire. But God says, then I'm going to bring a new heaven down to earth. Humble get to inherit the earth because it's only the humble people that are going to be there in the end. It's only the humble people who are going to be there in the end. How do I know if I'm humble? Easy. Do you point out other people's sin or do you ask for forgiveness on your own? And if you constantly point out other people's sin and never ask for forgiveness of your own, that probably means you're not very humble. Humble people will inherit and live and continue into eternity. Prideful people, God says, I oppose the proud, but I give grace to the humble. And you know what I did this morning, in case you didn't realize it? I started with a text, an opening text, and I haven't even talked about that yet. Because I wanted to rewind, and I wanted to give a picture of every single thing that they were going through. Every single thing that they were going through in this part of the journey, which led up to our opening text, which was Exodus 17, starting in verse 8. While the people of Israel were still at Rephidim, the warriors of Amalek attacked them. And Moses commanded Joshua, choose some men to go out and fight the Amalek for us. Tomorrow I will stand at the top of the hill holding the staff of God in my hand. Joshua did what Moses had commanded, and he fought the army of Amalek. Meanwhile, Moses, Aaron, and Hur climbed to the top of a nearby hill. As long as Moses held up the staff in his hand, the Israelites had the advantage. But whenever he dropped his hand, the Amalekites gained the advantage. And Moses' arms soon became tired, and he could no longer hold them up. And Aaron and Ur found a stone for him to sit on. They stood on each side of Moses, holding up his hands. And so his hands held steady until sunset. And as a result, Joshua overwhelmed the army of Amalek. Our theme for 2024 has been fight the good fight, fighting the good fight, fighting the good fight. This is something that Apostle Paul said to Timothy, 1 Timothy 6:12, fight the good fight for the true faith. And when he said that, if you read that, fight the fight for the true faith, you may think in your mind, we may think, he's just talking about believing in God. That Paul, when he was speaking that to Timothy, we probably think he just was speaking, we should fight to believe in God. But that's not all that he was speaking about. Apostle Paul was saying to Timothy, listen, God has a treasure chest full of blessings for every single person who calls on his name. He says to Timothy, fight the good fight for the true faith, meaning you need to fight to be a Christian. You need to fight to hold on to your faith. But also, you need to fight for everything good that God has for you. Also symbolizing our journey in the Old Testament, the Jewish people, they were given a land with milk and honey, a house with a white picket fence. It was two stories. It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. But there was only one problem. They had to kick out the people living in there. They had to fight to take what was promised to them. And sometimes what we don't get and understand as believers, and even as Paul said this, if you look in the original language, he was saying, God has so many things for every one of us, we're just not willing to fight for it. That's why you have to fight the good fight daily to go after every blessing God has for you. Why is there so many wars in the Old Testament? We hear this. People complain. God's so mean. He's so rough. There were so wars. We're still fighting today. We haven't stopped fighting, right? How many of us, do we still see wars happen today? Do we still see fights happen at school? Do we still hear men and women having arguments with one another? We have not learned to stop fighting. Fighting all the time from the beginning until today. I don't think it's God's problem. Maybe it's our problem. Maybe it's our problem. Why? Because instead of fighting for his blessings, we just get stuck in the distractions of this life. Instead of fighting and going after the promise of something better, the promise of something bigger and greater than what God has for us, we do exactly what the Jewish community did. We just fall back. Doesn't mean we fall back into sin. We just fall back and complain. Because we need to redeem ourselves. We need to redeem our feelings. We need to redeem what we're thinking and feeling. So our text this morning, my opening text, and I just read it again. It says that the Amalekites came and they attacked the Jewish people. And I'm sure many of us have ever felt just like they did. I'm behaving myself. I'm being a good boy and a good girl right now. And then all of a sudden, I'm just attacked. All hell is being unleashed and coming against me. These people came after the Jewish people. They were fighting them. But there was one guy, the one guy they complained about all the time, named Moses. When he stood and when he held up the staff that God had given to him, it says they were winning. But Moses got tired. Because how many of us know it's hard to stand all day and have your hand up? He's got a question. Does Beanie get a question? He had his hand up with the staff all day long to where he couldn't do it on his own. So what happened? Moses had two brothers there to help. They first got him a seat on a stone. There was no cushions provided, so he had to sit on a rock, but at least he was sitting. And then it says that they held up his hands. No matter what we're going through, and no matter what we're going to continue to go through, no matter what we're going to go after in life, because of our thirst, because of our hunger, life is absolutely about a couple things. And that first one is, and is super important, is again, learning to look at life humbly. And secondly, like Moses, learning, I need my friends, I need my brothers to stand with me, to fight with me. God has something good for us. God has something big for us. But we got to fight together. Instead of against one another, let's fight together. Let's fight together to go after all that God has. It took Moses and it took two friends to hold his arm so that they can win the battle. God has people in our lives, and it's usually not the people that we like. It's usually the people we don't like. Jesus, when he was here, I loved his words. He says, listen, stop being nice to your friends. Be nice to your enemies. Stop. Why do we greet only our friends? Why do we give gifts only to the people that we like? Jesus said, if you want to be perfect, go and give to the people you hate. Be nice to the people you don't like. He says, then you will have a reward in heaven. There's people in your life that actually are meant to give you strength, but instead of giving you strength, they're giving you weakness. There's people that God sends every single day and sometimes every single week into our lives, and instead of accepting them for the reason that God brings them into our lives, sometimes we reject them, and in rejecting them, we're rejecting the strength that God gives us. Moses stood and he fought by standing for his people. Who's God asking you to stand for today? Who's God asking you to stand and fight for this week? Sometimes as parents, it's our kids, because they live in a weird world just like us. But who's God asking us to fight for? Who's God asking you to fight for? Stand, fight, surround yourself for people who want to fight for what God has.